tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
This is episode 84 of the In Tech We Trust podcast. You know what I'm going to say first, actually? May the 4th be with you. You guys say that in the States, don't you, right?
I knew you were going to say that, Nigel. I was going to put it in the Slack channel, and I was like, no, I know Nigel's just going
to
say it.
You know, the worst thing as well is, like, by the time we get around to editing this, like, it's going to be, like, May the 10th or something before it's
May
out.
The 14th be with you.
We're recording on May the 4th. Anyway...
Welcome, everybody, to the podcast. Who have we got? We've got Lauren and we've got Mark.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, Lauren. Glad you could be here.
Your turn.
Your turn, Lauren.
Yes, I'm talking like I always do, don't I?
What, you've got your mouth shut while you're talking there?
I do. I've mastered it.
Yeah, you have.
Really? Your mouth is shut? You're talking with your teeth closed?
Yeah. Yeah, for real. I talk with my mouth shut pretty much. That's like kind of normal for me.
What?
Are you like a ventriloquist or something?
It's not my lips, just my teeth.
I know, but my lips are moving. I mean, nobody can tell, but I still have this weird, like, distortion thing going on.
I think you're thinking about it too much.
Maybe. Why are we talking like this? This is like nothing tech-related, and it's just... to a legend of the podcast industry over at Speaking in Tech.
Yes, Speaking in Tech, that's it. Yeah.
Speaking in Tech.
So, Greg, I mean, he's like a powerhouse in the tech podcasting industry. He's going, well, apparently going dark for quite a few weeks while he has some personal upgrades done. He's going to be Greg 4.0 when he comes back. I think Ed and Sarah are going to manage the podcast for him while he's gone. Really, how long he's gone for, we don't know, but... Facebook seemed to suggest it might be like 2 or 3 months or something while he has some jaw surgery done. Now, Lauren, you've had jaw surgery done before, haven't you? So that's why you're an expert at speaking with your mouth wired shut, yeah?
That's right. I've had practice. So, you know, I think it's doable. So hopefully Greg isn't gone the entire 3 months.
No, hopefully not. But you know what? I know you've already talked to him about this anyway, Lauren, but it's brutal, right?
Yeah, I have to admit, it is. I've had several surgeries, including some very painful skin grafting and stuff like that. But the jaw surgery, man, that was the absolute worst, I have to say. Yeah, and not for like months, but just the first 3 or 4 days is just really painful. After that, it was actually fine. Just I missed food.
Yeah, I was going to say, how does that work? Like, how do you eat?
You're supposed to like grind up, you know, blend up. Anything you want, really. There's actually a bunch of recipes out there to do it. You know, I was fairly young at the time, so I mostly lived on Pepsi and putting Hershey Kisses in between my cheek and my teeth and eventually getting that chocolate.
What, get it through the gaps of your teeth?
It's possible. It's probably not great for your teeth, though.
I bet.
You just filter it right through, Nigel.
Yeah.
Just suck it right in.
Yeah. That's right.
So, actually, why don't we do this for, like, 2 minutes? So that's your worst piece of surgery, is it, Lauren, yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
Have you had any gruesome, painful surgery, Mark?
Just my two Achilles surgeries.
Oh.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're out for the surgery and you come back and then, you know, they give you a lot of painkillers. It's just a 9 month, it's a 9 month recovery. The surgery itself, you know, you're out for, but then afterwards it's rough because you can't walk on it. They put a big soft cast on you and you wear crutches and the crutches wear your arms out and, you know, dig into your armpits and all that stuff. And you can't drive.
You could. I mean, I've driven left-legged before. It's not safe, probably.
It's not that safe.
Yeah.
People used to look at me. I would pull my crutches out of my back seat. People would be like, wait, how did that happen?
So I think the funniest thing about that was the first time I had it. I was going to go, I was going to an SNW conference down in Palm Springs. Actually, the first time it happened, I had to cancel. I was doing a keynote down there, and I had to cancel. I couldn't show up. The second time it happened, I was also going to Palm Springs. And what was funny about the airport at that time is that they didn't have a jetway. They had stairs. Oh. And, they bring a forklift with a big box, and you just basically go out into a box on a forklift, and they lower you down that way. It's pretty much fun.
Well.
traveling around.
So the worst surgery I've had, right, is I could only breathe up one of my nostrils, like, when I was younger. Well, I mean, I could breathe up both, but not much air got up the other one. There was, like, I had a misshaped bone inside of my nose. So I don't even know, I don't remember what the surgery was even called. But basically, they scrape off the bone, or they shape it up. Honestly, I mean, like, I'm cringing just thinking of it, right? But then they pad your nose. And when you come around, not long after you've come around after the surgery, because it was a general anesthetic, they then have to pull the swabbing that's in your nose. They have to, like, pull it. Yeah.
Oh, no.
And shall I tell you, right, this was the best and the worst thing about it, though, right? After that, for, like, the next couple of days, like, you're under strict instructions not to pick your nose, like, a week or so afterwards. But that whole nostril of my nose filled with dry blood. So it was like solid, which was like awful. But I tell you what, when it comes away, picking that out, man, let me tell you.
Are you telling us that was good, picking it out?
Like when it came away of its own accord and I could actually grab it with my fingers and just pull it out. I tell you, it was up there with, like, taking a piss when you're desperate.
Super, a super satisfying nose picking.
Yeah.
Wow. There's something to that.
Well, I vowed to myself, actually, because I was having that surgery and what have you, and I wasn't allowed to pick my nose afterwards, I got out of the habit of picking my nose. What are we talking about this for? Anyway, and I vowed to myself that I'd stop picking my nose for the rest of my life. Yeah. Well, that didn't.
Oh, wow.
That's a mighty big promise to make kicks off.
Yes. Anyway, so good luck to Greg for that.
Absolutely, Greg. If you hear this, we hope we hope everything goes well and that you come back real soon and are healthy and well and don't have a lot of pain.
And Ed and Sarah as well for keeping the podcast going in his absence. Actually, you know what? You just reminded me as well. We should have mentioned this last week, I think. In fact, maybe here's a new feature to the podcast, right? My kids, they watch kids TV, right, like you do. And on a morning, they have birthday cards for, like, you know, you can send cards in to BBC or whoever. And when it's your kid's birthday, they'll read it out as part of a kids TV program. My kids were always like, oh, daddy, will you send a card in when it's my birthday? And we always forget, of course. Well, we could do a birthday slot on the podcast, right? If it's your birthday, ping us and we'll call it out, right? I'm saying that because Chris Evans was the grand old age of 50 last week.
Oh, 50, yes.
Good grief, yeah. So congratulations on your half century there, Chris. I know Chris listens probably to most episodes, although struggle to get him on. Such a busy man. But congratulations on your 50th. Chris, how many years until you get to 50, Lauren?
What's the math? 16.
16, all right, okay.
Is that right? Yeah.
How many till you get to 50, Mark? Or shall we?
I'm going negative. Let's see. If we use absolute value here, then I'd be 9 years off.
Is that right? Well, he's in the same decade, as you know. So cool. Anyway, yeah. So if you've got any cool birthdays coming up, anyone, let us know. We might give you a shout out. I don't know. If anybody's like 100. Anyway, probably time to move on to tech news, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's about time.
Actually, just before we do that, did anybody see that Windows 10 story, the upgrade that popped up during the weather reading, yeah?
Yeah, I saw that when you posted that. That's pretty funny. You see that stuff all the time, or like the blue screen of death, but like on ATM, not an ATM, yeah. But, you know, something that you're like, wait, that's
no,
weird.
No, I do see it on ATMs. Contexts. And I saw it on the self-checkout at my local supermarket just the other day. But it actually coming up on live TV when somebody's got one of these massive screens in the background and, you know, they're talking about weather patterns and stuff. I mean, number one, that's bad for Microsoft. But whoever does IT there, I mean, sure, you would disable stuff like that or you'd have policies, right?
I missed something. What happened?
Yeah, so there was like a lady reading the weather out. It was Midwest in the US somewhere, wasn't it? Like Iowa or somewhere like that. She was doing the weather forecast, stood in front of a big screen, you know, like you do with clouds rolling past and stuff, and she was looking all glam. And then suddenly, ding, this like full-size it's now time to upgrade to Windows 10. You've seen the thing that popped up. Like,
Mark's familiar.
Yeah, Mark's well familiar. But the thing is, this thing's like the size of her in the background, and it covers up the weather map. And it's like, well done, Microsoft, and yeah, well done, local IT as well.
Yeah, I can't imagine the local news has a huge IT department.
No, probably,
but yeah, you would think they would notice a press notifications like that.
Well, they took it well, and, you know, it's made news in and of itself there. So, yes. Anyway, so let's
hilarious.
Run down.
Just hilarious.
I know, yeah. And our advice to them, right, is don't upgrade. Well, my advice would be to upgrade, but it seems like, I don't know, everybody's not having that super great experience like me. Mark, you'd be advising them not to, right?
Well, let's see, when we were working on this call today, I got Windows 10, I had Skype running, the call came in, I could hear the bee-doo, 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 that the call was there, but there was no window to answer the call. I had to shut down the Skype that was running and start it up again, and then when you called back, it worked.
It's a new feature, unanswerable calls.
Yeah, it didn't have to shut down the machine, didn't have to reboot it, but Skype got hung up some way. And I guess, you know, Skype, that's a Microsoft product now.
It is, yeah. We should probably just call this the anti-Skype podcast from now on, I think.
But we're too lazy to try anything else.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Anyway, let's have a rundown of the news then. So in tech news, there's a bunch of announcements came out of EMC World, and I suppose you could say these are the highlights according to In Tech We Trust. So the pig gets another coat of lipstick. Yeah, that's right. VNX mid-range storage arrays, the old Clarion, if you're old enough to know it, gets another coat of paint and a new name. So is that right? They've renamed it Unity. I know they've done some stuff under the hood, like it's got a new internal file system and I don't know, whatever, probably new processors and stuff, but they've renamed it as Unity. So it used to be Clarion, then it was VNX, then it was VNX2. It probably was something before that as well. And now it's Unity, but it's effectively the same product. I know it's not. It's had a lot of rewiring and stuff go on inside, but I don't know that it's really well positioned to be like the mid-range storage product of the future. And I'm really keen to see what happens when the whole Dell EMC merger happens. Maybe we'll talk about that in a second though. Something I did think was a little bit more interesting though. What were they calling it? Oh yeah. VirtuStream Storage Cloud. Okay. So apparently an enterprise grade cloud object store that can, I guess, be attached as a tier of storage to existing EMC storage technology. So like VMAX and not VNX, Unity and probably Isilon and maybe even Xtreme.io as well. I kind of thought that was interesting. Viper 3.0 was announced there. Dare I say software defined storage control plane. Not a massive fan of it, so not massively interested in that. Away from EMC though and back to Microsoft, Windows Server 2016. So that edge is ever closer. Apparently the latest tech preview just came out a few days ago, and it is feature complete. So everything that's going to be in Server 2016 is in the current tech preview, just probably a bit wobbly right now. So I guess everything that Microsoft are doing now is just trying to make it more stable, ready for a release. And the rumor is that they'll probably release it around about September when they have their Ignite conference. So that's what we've got in tech news. Business news. I'm going to be careful how I say this, right? Pernix Data are apparently looking for more funding. Certainly not saying that they're about to run out of cash. Apparently that's libelous, if I say that.
Yes, the articles use the word libelous. Anybody that says so is being libelous or something.
Right.
And they were quoting Jeff Aaron saying that it's libelous, yeah.
Yeah. So the thing is, I think they're something like 4 years old as a company, and I know they've taken $62 million in, I think, three rounds of funding. So burning through $62 million, not saying they're through it yet, okay, in 4 years. I mean, that's very believable, right? But we do understand that they're still doing all right as a company, taking on new employees, winning new business. But apparently the rumor is they're out there looking for more funding. There's talk between Pivot3 and XIO, though it doesn't seem to be going very far. I don't know what XIO are doing these days, and I don't know that their strategy, well, that they've even really got a strategy at the moment. Maybe we can talk about that one. And then a couple of executive exits. So Syed Hoda, I think I'm pronouncing that right, he's ending a long stretch of 3 months as the Scality Chief Marketing Officer. Now, I don't know what that says, right, other than maybe he wasn't a great fit at the company, because for all intents and purposes, at least from where I'm looking from, Scality seemed to be doing all right as a company, yeah? I think probably one to talk about. And, look, we're going to see a load of this over the next months and, I don't know, maybe years. But Paul Perez, Chief Technology Officer for Enterprise at Dell, has left the building. So he's only been in the position for about a year. But you know what? With all the EMC, Dell coming together, machinations, we're going to hear a lot of that kind of stuff in the future, I think. So that's the news, tech and business news. And I've got a dry mouth, and no doubt everybody's sick to death of hearing from me.
Yeah, but you covered it all, Nigel. We don't. There's nothing left to discuss.
I know.
Well, let's hang up.
Brevity next time, yeah?
It's just, I want to go now.
Yeah. Well, shall we play the outro music? No, but VNX, right? Is it long in the tooth now, or is it still going strong? And is it possible to take, like, a technology that was, I guess, Data General Clarion back in, like, back when Chris Evans was probably in his 30s, right? And maybe his 20s.
Maybe his 20s.
Yeah, and still be a viable market-leading product in, like, 2016, 2017 time period. Can you actually do that from a technical perspective?
First, we should get that straight. It had to be the 30s. It had to be Chris's 30s.
Right, okay.
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure. Yeah, I don't know. What did they do this time? Did they just port it? You know, is it basically a port of what they had? And if it's a port, then, big deal.
Yeah, right. So I know that apparently it's got a new internal file system, right, which is geared more towards being able to cope with transactional workloads. But, of course, you know, they're out there saying, while that's true, it still deals with non-transactional workloads very well as well. But apparently a new file system inside of there to make it deal better with transactional workloads. It's also got a new user interface as well. But you know what? User interface is like fluff at the end of the day. It's not like the core product, is it?
Well, the CLI, too, was changed, which is interesting on that note, because then what do people do? For instance, the VMware integration was all built on that NavSec CLI, and they're no longer using NavSec CLI. So it could be really disruptive, too, as far as user interface and CLI.
Oh, my God, yeah. Yeah, everybody rewrite all your scripts and all your automation.
It's killer, isn't it?
Yeah, sounds great.
Yeah. The thing is,
I also noticed, you're naming some of the new things, but they also apparently don't have dedupe or compression built in yet.
That's right. Yeah, that is right. But I think, I'm fairly sure I did read something saying that at least compression is coming at some point in the future. It's par for the course these days, isn't it, to pre-announce features.
They're just trying to make sure they don't sue themselves.
Well, based on that, though, so they're promising a disruptive upgrade when that happens, when compression and or dedupe come out. But
pretty
they said
much.
The same thing with Extreme IO as well, which would be non-disruptive. But, of course, as we know, that was a forklift upgrade.
Yeah, I know. When you go from non-dedupe to dedupe, that's a big, big deal.
So they've gone out there already and said there will be a disruptive upgrade when that comes, yeah?
Oh, I thought they were promising a non-disruptive.
Oh, sorry, I thought you said disruptive. Oh, right, okay.
No, I think they were promising non-disruptive, but they did the same thing with Extreme IO.
Oh, no, they did, absolutely, yeah.
Well, after the screw-up, though, with Extreme IO, you would think maybe they've actually figured out a way to do this. But,
I hope so.
Who knows?
Hopefully the features are built in, at least to the hardware, and, you know, it's just the software problem.
Now, I know we hinted at this in a podcast like a week or two ago, maybe, and again, it's around the whole Dell plus EMC coming together thing. There's a portfolio clash going to go on there, and, I mean, this seems like, well, you would know certainly a lot more than me, Mark. You know, to refresh a product like that takes a lot of planning and a lot of effort, so this will have been in the pipes for a long time, okay? But also, is it positioning itself? Well, I think two questions, right? Is this VNX or Unity, whatever it's called now, positioning itself for a war when the whole Dell plus EMC thing comes together? Is it, you know, looking to slug it out with, what's their products in this space? We were talking about them the other week.
Oh, Equalogic?
Yeah, but there was the other, Equalogic Compellent. And Compellent. Yeah. So one question is, you know, is it squaring up for a battle there? But the second question is, surely, and I'm looking to you, I think, on this one, Mark, they would have started work on this long before the whole acquisition thing was in the pipeline, right? And this isn't like a knee-jerk reaction to say, oh, you know, if we want our products to survive the merger, we've got to refresh and upgrade them, right? It can't be that, can it?
No, and these things take years of planning and work, and it looks to me like it's a port, right? And that stuff, it just takes a long time. But I don't know. To me, this is amazingly uninteresting. I read the blog on 50 mu or whatever.
50 micron. Yeah.
50 micron. Rob Copra's blog. I thought it was hideously written and hard to read. And just so much crap in here. I was like trying to figure out what the salient points were, and his use of graphics just made me want to barf. I don't know what to say. You know, he's got this picture of like this couple, and they're nose to nose, and look what they're having. It's like, you had me at HTML5. What the hell is that? You know, why don't you write something substantive, Rob? This is just crap. I don't know. I was going to say it. You get down here and scroll down, and you know, there's more graphics, and you look at them, and this is like worthless graphics. And like browser version support, this big table, you can put that in a small line. Oh. It just looks like it was cut and pasted from somebody's PowerPoint what this looks like. This just, it doesn't look like it was a good blog post trying to talk about what the salient feature, and maybe that's the point. Maybe this product is so empty and vacuous and nothing that they're just spraying a bunch of crap, but that's kind of what EMC does all the time anyway.
Oh, absolutely.
I am so sick and tired of the way they come out and they just paint everything, you know, whitewash it, blue wash it, red wash it, whatever. I don't believe there's anything there. I think this is Emperor's New Clothes. I think it's just rot. You know, I'll be amazed. You know, you talk about, is this product going to be able to, you know, is it going to argue with, offset, compete, live with Compellent? I don't know. The problem that EMC and Dell have is that they have to maintain install base for both products. But they're going to have a sales force that has to go out and sell both products.
Yeah.
And then they're going to have to incent the sales force to sell what? Both products or one product? My guess is that they haven't figured out which product is going to get, you know, is going to get the emphasis in the sales plan. Might as well go forward with the engineering work. You can't leave. Well, but this is what's weird about this. This is like a departure from the old VNX, right? There's compatibility issues. You can't replicate from one to the other. So if you're thinking about supporting an old install base, you're kind of cutting them off with this product.
Uh-huh.
You know, it doesn't really interoperate with these other products very well. I don't get it. It does confuse me. Yeah, it's been in the works a long time. I don't trust anything that they're saying about it. It's just...
Yeah, so, I mean...
I know that was a rant. I'm sorry. There's my rant.
No, it's fine. Because that, for me, right, that whole market is just not interesting anymore. Yet, you know, it's still generating cash and, you know, there's still sales to be made there. But I am very interested to see what goes on when the merger happens, right? I'd love to see that battle between... You know, I'd love to be a fly on the wall on some of the internal fights and discussions that go on when you decide which products become strategic and stuff like that, you know, as to whether it is, you know, what is best for customers going forward. You know, my gut feel would be that the Compellent technology is more geared for the future and for today. But
no dedupe in this thing. How can you introduce a product without dedupe?
I know,
right? You know,
it's 2016, guys.
That's fucking stupid, EMC. What the are you thinking?
Well, do either companies, I mean, whether we're talking about VNX or Compellent or Equalogic, are any of them really embracing virtualization even at this point? Or, I mean, much less microservices and containers and all that. But, you know, you look at newer startups like Tintree, which isn't like new, but all of the newer startups have built-in virtualization things, right? And from what I know of VNX, at least, that is definitely not built in. I don't know about the Dell products, but I would venture to say neither are built in. And with VMware being the third leg of this company, it seems odd to me as well.
Yeah.
Odd is such a generous word, Warren. I mean, come on. really think here.
Seems effing stupid, Mark.
So it does have support for VBOLs, right? And that
sure, VBOLs. But that built-in kind of, you know, to be able to see a VM, whether that be VMware or another VM, whatever. But, you know, you get a lot of that with other storage products that you would think that would be built in and just
Totally, yeah.
2016, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a product from, like, looking at it, it's a product from at least 10 years ago. And, you know, that's the whole thing. It's lipstick on something that's like, really?
That's okay. Why it looks like just like a port, right? You know, it's nothing new, not even anything, you know, not even a lot of old stuff gets in. My guess is that they hurried up to get this thing done before the merger closes. For some reason, politically, money wise, you know, project dollar wise, resource wise, something like that, they wanted to get this in before the door shuts on the merger. And so they're putting out an incomplete product and hoping that people will be stupid enough to buy it.
And they have been in the past. Track record there. So
yeah.
Probably onto a winner. So something I thought was mildly more interesting.
That's not cynical or anything, Nigel.
No, I know, yeah. But something that I did honestly think was mildly more interesting was the VirtuStream storage controller. Is that what it's called? Something like that. VSC. Oh, no. Sorry. VirtuStream storage cloud. Of course it was cloud, silly me. Anyway, so they've built a cloud. It's like, obviously it's a hyper uber scale object storage platform, right? I think it's got an S3 compatible REST interface, but their products like VMAX and Unity and ExtremeIO and things like that will be able to leverage it as a storage tier. So be able to say, as data gets colder, older, stuff like that, push it out to the VirtuStream storage cloud. Now, look, I know they're not the first to attempt this or anything like that, but it's at least not a product that's been around for 20 years, slap another coat of lipstick on it, doesn't do dedupe, doesn't do compression. What does it do that everybody else hasn't done for the last 10 years? It's not like that. This is, you know, they're at least trying to play in the cloud. I think they're trying to, I'm guessing they're trying to hook in enterprises because, I don't know, tell me if I'm wrong here, right? But there seems to be a kind of coming to terms with the fact that the cloud is real for enterprises as well, and they are actually starting to want to push workloads out there and maybe actually even starting to push some out there. So as that kind of, as that wheel kind of turns and enterprises like, you know what, we actually can start to leverage the public cloud, then people like EMC need to be able to get in there and say, well, you know what, we're your trusted partners from 20 years or whatever. Come work with us. Or is that a load of BS?
It seems like they were really trying to push, you know, public
centric. Say it's a load of BS, Lauren. Sorry. Now go on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm leaning towards the BS on the scale or whatever. But it did. It seemed like they were trying to push the security and, you know, it's okay for public sector people to use this. I question what is really new about it. I mean, you mentioned that you can have it basically as what another access point or how did you phrase it in the beginning?
A tier, did I say?
A tier.
Yeah, you can have it as like a lower tier with 13 nines of availability. Stick that in your pipe, Malhoit.
You got me there.
13 nines. Anyway, go on.
But
so where does this thing run?
Yeah, so there was no detail around that. It's going to be available in the US and Europe, but there was nothing about, you know, where the data centers and things like that are located. Yeah, sure, you can access it from everywhere, but it sounded like, reading between the lines, right, me totally making stuff up here, but it seemed to me like they had facilities in Europe and the US that were going to back this stuff.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Chad Sackett's basement.
Probably. Or, yeah.
Yeah.
Lauren, I interrupted you. I'm sorry. You were saying something before.
No,
I just blurted that out. My Tourette's took over.
No. You know, please keep going.
My EMC frustration Tourette's just completely, you know, jumped in there. It's like, what about, you know, I think it's a load of crap, right? Where is this? Where are these data centers? How are they going to get built? Is it run? This is a platform. Okay. It's a platform. A platform that runs where? On what? Built by whom? Paid by what? Who's got the money for it? Is Dell investing a lot of money in these big data centers somewhere all of a sudden?
Know, backed out of VirtuStream a while ago.
I'm sorry, I shouldn't use the F-bomb like that.
you're making, well, who's editing the show this week? Maybe you just volunteered yourself.
I'm expecting more F-bombs from him here after I tell him this. I've got some big shiny numbers to throw at you here, Mark, because I know
I haven't been drinking beer either. It's just coffee at this point.
Well, you're going to be impressed with these numbers. You're going to change your mind on the whole thing. 130 billion objects in it already. Where do they even get that number from, right? Who can count that high? And over 1.7 exabytes worth of storage. Yes! I'm flying the EMC flag here.
Who is writing this for him? Somebody from Microsoft? An ex-Microsoft copywriter? You know, what?
I don't know who's writing it, but I am taking it in. I am drinking it in and loving it.
Oh, boy.
I'm not really.
Yeah, there's all these people standing up. I use the VirtuStream Cloud. Where are all those voices? Where are all those hands? Who is this? What is this? This is rubbish. This is pure rubbish.
EMC throws
a party, and then they have to do stuff like this, and it gets worse and worse every year. What do they think we are, clowns?
They transferred all their Syncplicity data to it.
Syncplicity does have native hooks into it, apparently. There you go.
That's what I was wondering about. I was hoping for that for all, basically, the EMC employees. They can use it.
Is that still an EMC product, actually, Syncplicity, or did they get rid of that? I can't remember now.
I think it's gone, but internally they're still using it.
Yeah. Okay, so you asked for a show of hands who's using this VirtuStream storage cloud, yeah? I would bet good money on it that the same two hands that go up would be the same two people that are using Viper. So I remember all the I remember all of the fanfare around Viper, right? And look, I don't really work in this space anymore, so I could be totally shot down here. But that is another product I think that is just... it's just not done anything, in my opinion. I don't hear anybody talking about it, giving it love. I don't see it anywhere. I mean, look, I don't work in storage anymore, right? But I'm still out and about and talking to people, and I am not seeing Viper being used, so...
Did you say Vapor or Viper?
You are warm today, Lauren, yeah.
Something's changed, I don't know. I got a good night's sleep or something. I also remember being excited as a channel partner when it came out, you know, the very first announcement of it at EMC World or whatever. And it seemed cool, and, you know, we were all really excited about automation and all that good stuff. But at this point, I mean, they started giving it away for free, right, which I don't think is ever a really good sign that a product's doing well. And I've never encountered, even when I was an EMC channel partner, I've never encountered anyone using it. Not for real, anyway.
Not for real.
Yeah. I mean, maybe like we dabbled with it in-house, but yeah.
Oh, well. Version 3.0 of it got announced. Woot. Sadly, because we're having so much fun talking about EMC, let's pivot away from them. Windows Server 2016. Personally, right, I am super, super, and I'm being honest here, right, I am super, super interested in seeing what this turns out to be, right, because, honestly, it has been so long coming, and all of the kind of jazz and cool stuff that they're doing with Azure, and Azure in a box, and all that kind of stuff, and, you know, we're constantly thinking the operating system, or, well, at least we're thinking that Windows is like a core revenue stream for Microsoft. It's days as that could be in the past. I'm dead interested to see what comes with Windows Server 2016. You guys care about it at all or not?
Yeah, I used to really be on top of, you know, trying to get the bleeding edge on servers and all that back as an admin. But, yeah, these days I just don't really know much about it other than, you know, I think you mentioned a few months back that they were really trying to build in containerization and all of that good stuff, even though they were using kind of shims to make it happen. You know, it'd be interesting to see, again, like you said, all the built-in stuff, but it doesn't directly affect my life, so.
I don't care as long as it's got the Windows 10 upgrade screen that pops up every now and then.
As long as Skype works.
Yeah. Wouldn't that be a laugh? Windows Server 2016, it pops up. You must upgrade to Windows 10.
I think Windows 2016 will be a lot better if they cut a lot of crap out of it. It was such a bloated product. I mean, you can say full-featured, and that's true, but they didn't really even know how to support or document it or any of those things, right? Windows Server 2012 is just a hodgepodge of everything. Someone just came in.
Hey.
One of the things that I think is probably, in my opinion, the most interesting thing that will come from Server 2016 is the Windows Nano Server, which I don't know what the latest numbers are, but I do remember, like, I don't know, 6-10 months ago, I wrote an article for some online publication, don't remember who now. But the stat was the code footprint was 93% less than a standard Windows Server install. So, because they did this, they did it like a slimmed down version of Server 2012, or what was that called? Was it called Server Core or something like that? Yeah.
Yeah, they went from 200 terabytes down to only 20 terabytes.
So, something like that, right? Yeah. But apparently this nano server is like proper going to town on that angle. So it's all like, cause I guess at the end of the day, right, Windows Server and Windows Desktop have been, I don't know, like.
doesn't your server need Media Player?
Exactly, right? So they went like kind of half the distance with Server Core, but it really seems like nano server, they kind of get the fact now that, you know, data centers, enterprise, cloud, actually, you know, when you're spinning up servers in the cloud for density, number one, you need as tiny as possible. For attack surface as well, I mean, Windows Media Player, it is the kind of thing that there'd be a vulnerability in there that would let you be able to escalate to like Uber admin and take the operating system.
Yeah,
directly down.
Yet another piece of code that you have to patch and adjust.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
The problem with Windows Core was that Server Core was that nobody knew how to do any of the command line functions to set anything up.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So it still didn't have a UI. You had this, you know, command line. You're like, all right, well, how do I set up the network? I'm a Windows point and click guy. This doesn't make any sense. So there were a bunch of people that were a little bit code literate, were able to get that up and running and do some of that stuff. But the learning curve was steep. I think now that we've gotten into the world of PowerShell, and commandlets and all of that functionality, and we're getting a little more code fluent in terms of, how we orchestrate things. It makes more sense to kind of go down that route. It's probably better, more prime time now, and obviously it fits well into their Azure cloud stack solution, or their Azure cloud portfolio, as well as their movement towards a more container-based friendly solution, which they kind of need that, right? If they want to stay relevant and not lose to, etcd, CoreOS, LXC, whatever. I can't remember all the acronyms for the different container runtime. You know that space better than I do, Nigel, but It opens the door for them.
So are they going to leave out Hyper-V?
No, still in there. Don't know about in Nano Server. Don't know about that. But Hyper-V is absolutely still a part of their, can I call it, Windows Server 26 bloated versus Nano Server?
Don't you think they can make a stripped-down nano version of Hyper-V as well?
Maybe.
I mean, a really lightweight commodity hypervisor, right? And then do all of the other stuff higher up the stack. What is Microsoft doing around software-defined networking integration points at that level? Is there a player story around that as well? I mean, I think you could take, Nano Server and turn it into all kinds of different functional, modules, right? Get a more module-based OS.
That only the developers at Microsoft will understand, and nobody will ever fully get.
Hang on, Mark. You've already weighed into EMC. You're going to weigh into Microsoft as well now, yeah? Lay waste.
It's just a product like Server. It was completely understaffed on maybe not on the development side, but certainly on the marketing side. You know, it's just too much functionality in there, and you've got a very thin crew of people trying to support this entire breadth. It's basically all your infrastructure needs in a software package, and it became really unwieldy. It was very hard for people to figure out what all was in it, and it was just huge. So is this going to be any different? I like the idea of nano. It'd be, something that's pared down makes a lot of sense to me. Maybe they can actually staff it adequately. But the way they've been siphoning off resources to go to Azure, that group that was doing, infrastructure products at Microsoft, a lot of those people have been moved over to Azure.
Well, I mean, that makes me curious as to what Microsoft's answer is to the data center OS. Is nano going to be their first foray into that instead of Windows Server? Because,
I think Linux.
Me, honestly... Yeah, for me.
No, seriously, come on.
Yeah.
Don't laugh.
Bash on Windows. Maybe it becomes a hybrid OS. I mean, I just don't, I mean, personally, I mean, it's been several years since I've been a day-to-day admin. I just, I would almost expect larger organizations to take a Linux-first approach to almost everything.
Yeah. So maybe nano's about Internet of Things, right? Maybe they want to stick it in your thermostat and your whatever else you got to take a reading on some other meter.
Yeah, as somebody who actually provisioned and implemented a terminal server environment with Windows CE clients back in 1999 and 2000, I hope they.
Yeah, but that was Ballmer's.
Right,
that was Ballmer's.
I actually liked Windows CE. It ran well on I think it had an HP Jornada. That was a cool little device, man. Kind of, you know, ahead of its time.
So, Windows Server 2016, the latest tech preview is feature complete now. And I think the rumors are we're looking at something like a September release for the core product. So at their Ignite symposium, whatever it is. I'm really interested to see what comes of that. We're running a little bit long, so let's switch over to business news quickly then. Do we want to talk about Pernix Data and them apparently going for more money is burning through $62 million in 4 years? Or, okay, they're not through it, we'll say that again. But, you know, $62 million in 4 years, that's not a huge burn rate, is it?
No, and they're not a very large company either. I still don't think they're over 200 employees.
I have an honest question. So, I mean, they touted having 800 customers now. Is that good?
After four years?
For their size? Yeah.
Not good.
Not good. Put into context, I think Tintree at 4 years had 2,000. Nimble had essentially almost gotten close to IPO, and it was close to the 2,500 customer rate. I mean, I honestly think that the problem with Pernix is that model of cache host-based acceleration just did not resonate strongly enough with enough customers to make a viable concern. And you look at the other players in that market, which would be Infinio, and then Proximal Data, which got picked up by, I think, SanDisk or somebody like that. It just, you know, it didn't pan out, right? So, it was a technology I thought was kind of interesting, and I think the anticipation was that they were going to get picked up by a VMware or somebody else like that and integrated, but not necessarily something where they were going to build up enough market momentum and run rate business to actually exit.
My thoughts on it, and again, when I was a channel partner, you know, I was definitely looking into Pernix and I thought it was a cool product, but for what it seemed to be really great for, which was kind of smaller to mid-market companies, it was a little too expensive for really what you're getting. Well, I don't know if you guys agree on that or...
I think the best route to market for Pernix was to basically front-end an older storage platform. Right, you wanted the performance, you know, the performance of in-memory, you know, or close to flash-like performance in the host for certain functions, and then I put an Equalogic on the back end for the, you know, the larger data portion or the persistent data piece. In that kind of package, I know a couple Pernix resellers and some Pernix people that they had good success putting that in. I have not heard about, you know, really large accounts running it. I probably should just ask some of the people over there. It's always hard to get that kind of information, you know, to kind of really find out what the health of a company is. I mean, we've all seen companies that have persisted for a period of time longer than their shelf life, primarily because they were able to be very frugal with their VC funds. But we all know that they're never going to amount to anything.
I remember like 3, maybe 4 years ago, there was this whole kind of explosion of companies that were wanting to do that, you know, put flash into a server on a PCIe card. In fact, didn't EMC have a play there? Maybe they still even do. Was that like Thunder or Lightning or VF Cache or something? But it seemed like, you know...
Or Vapor.
Yeah, Vapor Cache?
Vapor.
Yeah.
VMware had a play there. I mean, they still have a play there.
But it's never really matured as a market, has it? That's the thing. It's never really taken on.
No, that Thunder Lightning product essentially ended up becoming what... They moved over to DSSD, or DSSD, I think, ended up supplanting that, right, that whole concept. And that's what Datrium is one of them, or one of the, something, Datera, not, I think it's Datrium. They have a similar product where there's kind of a in-host portion, and then there's a flash shelf that you connect to, and I'm like, yeah, not going to do it.
Cheap available flash just steamrolled that, made it unnecessary. There's just not enough people that have that kind of I/O requirement, that kind of like super, super low latency.
Well, or if they do, it's at a scale that's well outside what those people are able to provide, right? Oh, you
Bingo.
Can connect 20 hosts of this to my one flash shelf. Yeah, what about the 2,000 hosts that I need?
You know, as well, going back to the is 800 customers a lot or not, a product like this as well, which is, at the end of the day, relatively, I'm careful what I say here, Lauren, because I know you said, you know, potentially it was more expensive than you thought it was worth. I'm paraphrasing there, right? But relatively cheap to buy, let's say, one or two and try them out in your environment, only having 800 customers, in my opinion, then suddenly looks like, you know, actually, that's not a lot. I mean, 800 customers might be a lot if you're trying to sell a mid-range VNX as your product and you're a new company, because it's a big outlay that people have to make.
No, I mean, I think 800 customers is really awesome if your average deal size is $1 million.
Exactly, yeah. But when it's small, like these potentially
it's
are.
It's 15K.
It was 5K per instance, as I remember it. Now, that was 2 or 3 years ago, so I don't know. But so I believe it was like 5K
maybe expensive for the product, but not expensive in the grand scheme of things. Like most people can sign off on their budget $5,000, right?
Unless you're marketing to smaller people. And then it's right. 5 per yeah. instance, so that's just one. Like yeah. I forget how they did
you
it.
You start with 3.
ESXi server or whatever. Yeah, you'd start with 3, 15K for your cluster of 3. But
you buy an Echologic for 15K.
Exactly.
So like you said, Lauren, you thought it was cool, but yet again another instance of where we see technologies and ideas and things that are potentially cool, but not nailing a particular market or a particular business need or you know,
it's
not
technology
that combination.
For technology's sake.
Right, yeah.
And a great feature.
Great feature for your hypervisor as an optional add-on. The thing that sucks about all this is, like, Satyam is the coolest dude ever. You know, Frank's over there. Peter Chang. There's a bunch of people I know over there. They believe in the product. They believe in the vision that they put forth. They put a lot of hard work and effort into this. They have a great reputation. I hate to see those things happen to people that, you know, are friends.
Yeah, I mean, brilliant guys, for sure.
And it's not like they're closing the doors or anything, right?
No, I don't think so.
All it is is...
We're definitely saying no, because we don't want to be sued.
No, I know, yeah. They're going strong! So, XIO, I don't know, for the longest time it's been like, what are they actually trying to do? I mean, the all-flash space is crowded, hard to make your way there. I don't think they have a strategy at the moment, do they? Again, another company with great people and what have you, but just seem to be a little bit lost at the moment. Mark, I mean, I know you know people there, right?
It's been an interesting company for a long time, just kind of a zombie. It's existed forever. It's like the cockroach of storage. Nothing can kill it.
But didn't they have 11 CEOs?
Yeah, I don't know what the number is. It's been a large number. They've had some bad luck and they've had some bad decisions. And I mean, it's amazing to me that they're still limping along. I don't give them much chance of succeeding, but.
Yeah, and then what we heard or what I heard or what some others or somebody reported was Chris Miller or whatever, them trying to combine with Pivot3, it's like, it's two zombies doing a group hug, and then we just need somebody to come by with, you know, some ice picks and just put them out of their misery, right? Because it's like, you got Pivot's been around for like 10 years, still nobody knows what the hell their message or story is. First they were video surveillance, and then they were hyper-converged, and now they bought Next Gen, and I'm like...
You never want to combine two companies like that. They're just trying to figure out some way to continue going. I think what Bill Miller is doing here, I think Bill actually cares for the employees at XIO, and he's trying to find them a place to go to work. And he might be doing he might do them more of a favor to just shut the doors.
Difficult decision to make that, though, isn't it? So you're suggesting, and I think I read this, or there were undertones in some of the articles I read around it, that they're looking to strike a deal with somebody else to sell IP and to maybe move team members and staff across, things like that, yeah?
I think it looks kind of like... Let's find jobs for the employees.
Which is decent stand-up of him, but it's a sad place to be in, though, isn't it? It's a shame.
It is. Both those things I agree with.
All right, then. So I think enough tech and biz news for this week. Time for what's usually the highlight of the show. Let's hand it over to the hot or not maestro, Lauren.
Thank you, Nigel. All right, so this week's hot or not is quantum computing. So let me do like a brief description because I really didn't know much about it before. I'd heard, you know, Justin Trudeau, Canada's PM, talking about it, but that's about it. So the way I understand quantum computing is pretty basic, but where a traditional computer uses bits, as we all know, and these bits can be only a zero or one. In quantum computing, they're using quantum bits or qubits, and these qubits have a state. And the state is not necessarily known until the particular computation you're trying to calculate is done.
What?
And there are actually, hang with me, there are actually three states in quantum computing, which are 0, 1, or it can be both. Think of Schrodinger's cat, if you will.
What?
So is that a tranny bit?
Right.
The tranny bit.
So it
It can also use what they call superpositions, which means it can take the state of two or more qubits together to get several more states. And this seems to be an exponential increase. So if you have two qubits, you could get seven. If you have three, you get like 15 states. And since we're able to entangle these qubits as well as start to calculate states before the computation is done, this can prove to be a much faster method of computing.
I was thinking that, actually. Yeah, I was just about to say that.
Exponential growth.
Long or the short, it's a lot faster. And there's some math involved. And I was a math major, but haven't been in 15 years. So none of it made that much sense to me. But basically, it's a lot faster. What do you guys know about quantum computing? Do you think it's hot or not? Is this a use case for, you know, analytics, basically? Or are there other use cases out there? Or is this technology for technology?
I'm going to say not, but not for the reasons normally people would. I'm going to say not because it's going to lead to Skynet and AI or something crazy, horrible, evil. And I don't want super fast mega computers when the ones I have today are perfectly okay.
What? You can't say that.
It's going to lead to the robot overlord takeover. It's going to it's something that they've been talking about for a long time. There's some work being done around organic computing as well. I think it is one of those things that will help us solve some of the more difficult modeling problems. And I always see that the use case for this one tends to be in that high performance computing space initially. And that's probably where the bulk of time and effort is probably going to be focused on. So, when you're doing something like weather modeling or geological survey type work, it requires a lot of speed and a lot of calculations and a lot of information to be processed in a single point in time. That's what those types of solutions are going to be probably more geared toward, and not necessarily towards consumer grade utilization, right?
So was that a not hot from you?
I'm going to say hot, and you can ignore the robot overlord part, even though I do think that this leads to Skynet and our eventual destruction.
There we go.
I think for those same reasons, Nigel's going to say it's hot.
No, so I'm going to say...
I welcome our robot overlords.
Yes. No, I'm going to say it's hot because quantum computing will lead to quantum leap.
There we go.
Yeah. Do you know what? I didn't understand a single thing of what you said, but faster computing, I think, yeah, that's super hot, isn't it, right? We all want that. Though I do disagree. So, you know, all the brightest minds in the world used to go into science and what have you, and, you know, NASA and space, and places like, NASA and places like that. I heard recently, like a couple of years ago, saying that all of the top talent, all like the best maths people and stuff like that, are now going to work for financial companies like hedge funds and investment banks and stuff like that to predict markets and write algorithms and stuff like that. So I wouldn't be surprised to see stuff like this get into, this sounds like, I don't know, well, I don't know what it sounds like actually, but I just imagine things like this will all be plowed into making rich people richer, you know.
They're just going to put it in our toasters.
So, yeah, I think I haven't got a clue. I'm blown away by it.
I think that's fair. Mark, you have any...
Just before Mark does, I'll tell you what the difficult thing for me is, right? At least with computing as we have it now, and most of the things that we talk about, while I'm, like, really far from being an expert on any of them, I at least kind of get most of them, and I can understand binary numbering systems and stuff like that. I can probably count in binary in my sleep. But what you just talked about there, Lauren, I just don't even understand the basics of it, right? And it's kind of scary.
It is. It's very scary. And Schrodinger's cat has always befuddled me.
But it gets to, and it plays on Gabriel's point about the robot overlords and Skynet and what have you. We're going to get to the point, I think, where only the machines understand the machines, right?
And isn't that what machine learning is all about?
Yeah, something like that, yeah. So I'm going to say it's neither hot nor not. It's neither hot nor not. It's scary. That's what it is.
Fair.
What do you say, Farley?
It is so not hot. It is ice freaking cold. because the CPU for this thing, you know, today has to be kept in a cryogenic dilution refrigerator. And it just means it's got to be super cooled in order to work. And with global warming going on, or I should say climate change going on, you know, where are we going to find cold enough temperatures to run these things? I think for this technology to be workable, it has to be able to exist in a real world environment. I don't think we're going to get around the fact that it has to be super chilled. I just don't see this thing being able to expand as an infrastructure when it's got to be inside big cryogenic tanks where you can't get at it, you can't work at it, all that stuff. I think it's very interesting. I think it's completely impractical. Great for IBM to dally with it, but really cold.
Ultimate engineered solution.
Can we just put like a Mr. Freeze suit on it?
Yes.
Mr. Freeze. I love that.
I've been watching Gotham, so Mr. Freeze.
Man, isn't that good? That's like the best. I'm not a big DC Comics fan, but that show has kind of converted me. I'm like, if DC Comics were that good, it would be so much better to read them, but the show is actually quite wonderful.
It took me a while to get into it, but I do like it. I don't love it, but I like it.
I like that Batman's kind of a wuss.
He's also 13.
Yeah. It's prepubescent Batman at his best.
So as interesting as that conversation is, I want to know if you think it's hot or not, Lauren.
Yeah, theoretically, again, I know I go to this all the time. Theoretically, I think it's really hot. Mathematically, scientifically, really cool.
No pun intended.
Really ice cold. But you know what? I'm just going to say hot, and I'll leave it at that. As cool as ice.
So I've got a question for everybody just off of the back of that, right? You know what Gabriel's saying there about Skynet and stuff like that? Is that really going to happen? Are we going to get to the point where the machines turn on us? Deadly serious. Oh. And all I want here is a yes or a no, right? Gabriel, you obviously think yes. Lauren, yes or no?
No.
Oh, honestly, you're living in another world, Lauren. Mark?
Definitely going to happen.
I don't know
if it'll happen in our lifetimes. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen. Totally.
Because we screw everything up. The machines, at some point, will figure out that the weakest link is the human being.
Uh-huh.
It's the eventual advancement of our society as the human race, as we digitize our consciousnesses, put them in the machines.
But won't
the only thing
us?
We're going to be useful for is maintaining them.
Oh.
Yeah.
Proper Matrix style, yeah?
Nope.
Pretty much.
Wow.
You guys are watching too many movies.
What an awesome future we've got.